Okay, we start at the bottom of Bet Amud Bet. Here the Gemara is going to address the last issue that we discussed in the Braita yesterday, which is that there were four things that are said by Edim Zomimim. I mean, there are four instances where we do not give them Kasher Zamam Nasot. And then we had a statement, Rabbi Akiva, that they're not Mishalmim Al Pei Atzman. That when it comes to Edim Zomimim, they don't pay when it's by their own admission. So here the Gemara at the bottom of Bet Amud Bet, but the Tudat says, my time with Rabbi Akiva, what's the reason my Rabbi Akiva? Kasavar Kansahu Knas Eno Mishalem Al Pei Atzmo. He believes that the payment that is made by the Edim Zomimim is a Knas and not monetary restitution. And therefore, we have a principle by Knas that Amodah B'Knas is Patur. Someone admits when it comes to a fine of sorts, then they are considered to be patur. So over here, if the Edim Zomim admit to what they've done, then they are patur from paying the knas. Some are rabo teido. That makes sense. Sharei lo asu maaseh v'nehargim u'mishalmim. So I'll tell you, I can prove to you that it's a knas because they're not doing any maaseh. And they're doing, there's nothing action. They're taking no action here. And yet they're being put to death and they're paying. So it's clearly that this is not a letter of the law, din, it's a gzerat ha-ketuv, but the gzerat ha-ketuv is a knas, because they really shouldn't be culpable in these cases, because they did no ma'aseh. As Rashi points out, it's an interesting line of Rashi. Rashi says, it's kantu shari hamidim benefesh lo hargu adam. Just because they testified about a person doesn't mean they killed him, and v'lo ne'arag adam al-piyam. And that no person was killed by their statements. Because we stopped. This is the whole point. Edim zomimim is kasher zamam v'lo kasher asa. So therefore, even if they spoke, we don't consider their speaking or their testimony to be a ma'aseh, which is a little bit what we discussed yesterday, this idea that that doesn't qualify as a ma'aseh. The speech over here is not a ma'aseh, as opposed to the other Tanaim who do believe it, but here the Gemara is clearly leaning in the sense that there is no ma'aseh here. So therefore, if there is no ma'aseh, and then from the letter of the law they shouldn't be paying and they shouldn't be killed, nevertheless we're doing it, that indicates that it's a knas. Amar Rav Nachum, Rav says, Teida. I tell you that's true. Sharei mamon biyad balim umishalmim. Says that the owners still have their money, and yet you're still paying. I mean that normally when you pay for nezek, you pay for other items, it's restitution of some sort. You're trying, there's a loss, and you're trying to, right, to restore to the even plateau what was lost over here. But over here, the balim lost absolutely nothing, because the case got to a gemar din, but nothing was actually executed. Since nothing was executed, why were they, or the, carrying out of the final judgment was not done, then why do they have to pay over here? The fact that they're paying anyway shows you that it's a knas. The Gemara says, "Amaynihu, what does this mean that they don't have to? Because the lo asu maaseh, what does it mean that the mamon is still with the original owners? Well, it's an indication, shelo asu maaseh, that was nothing was done, there was no action that was done. Well, if they didn't do maaseh, then that's exactly what Rabba said before. What is Rav Nachman then adding to the statement of Rabba? If he's just saying the same thing, then what's he adding? So Gemara says, "I know the Rabba." So the Gemara says, "Ema v'chein amar Rav Nachman." We can solve that problem. Just say that it's v'chein amar Rav Nachman. Not that Rav Nachman's an independent statement or a separate statement, but rather he's supporting that position that's put forth by Rabba, that the lack of maaseh is an indication that there is a knas here and not actual punishment or retribution or restitution. Amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav. And there's Eid Zomeim Mishalem Lefi Chelko. So Rav Yehuda amar Rav makes a statement that an Eid Zomeim pleads according to his portion of the culpability. Now, my Mishalem Lefi Chelko. Gemara wants to know, what does that mean? Ilemen, the high Mishalem Palgov, a high Mishalem Palgov, you have two witnesses, and they're made into Eidim Zomeim that they share in the cost of the loss that they were going to cause. Tanina, that's a Mishnah. That's an explicit Mishnah. What do I need? I'm Rabbi Yehuda Marav to tell me this. Mishalshim b'mamon v'yomishalshim b'malkot. That when it comes to monetary matters, the Edim Zomim split between them the value or the loss that they caused to the party, or that they intended to cause to the party. Whereas when it comes to Malkot, each one individually, you can't divide it up. You don't say, oh, we're going to give him 40, so we give each of you 20. No. Each one gets the full 40 lashes or 39 lashes that the other person would have indicated. But we see it's a Mishnah. What do you need from me to wrap? Ella, you're going to Itzum Chad Minayu. So what's the case here? That only one of the two Edim was made into an Eid Zomim. So what, he's going to pay half? It says, Zomim Mishalim. Vatanya, we have a Braita that says, Eid Zomim Mishalim Mamonach Zomushneim. We have a basic principle that Eidim Zomim are not made into Eidim Zomim until the entire cat, until the full group of Eidim is made into Eidim Zomim. If only one of them is made into Eid Zomim, Enoch and Ami, it's a pasul. They're not edim anymore, but he's not an eid zomim. He doesn't have a classification. You have to have the whole kat be made into eidim zomimim. So you can't have it that one eid was made into an eid zomim and the other wasn't, and therefore he pays half. No, they're not going to pay until they're both found to be eidim zomimim. All right, Amar Rava, be'omer edut sheker hayati. So now, what is it? He says, I lied, or heidano, we lied. I mean that he comes back and he changes his mind. After they had testified, he says, you know what, we really lied. We didn't do this. And that we really didn't see this. We really were not there. Umar says, kol kamine. What right does he have to retract his testimony? Kevin shehigid, shuvenu chozer magid. We have a general principle in Eidut, right, which we discussed in, Sanhedrin and in Baba Batra, which is that the once person's given testimony, they can't retract the testimony. And even if they want to, we don't let them. Why? What were we afraid of? We're really afraid that they decided, what do I need this pain for? Meaning that, oh my gosh, somebody's going to be killed based on what I say. So they want to back out, not because they really lied, but because they don't want to have someone kill someone. They don't want to have to be the one responsible for killing somebody else. That's true. It could be that they're lying, but we say once they've given testimony, they don't have a right to retract their testimony. So over here, even when they come to us and tell us they're lying, doesn't matter. We don't allow them to undermine their original testimony. Ella beomer he'adnu v'huzamnu bebeitin ploni. So he comes and says, listen, he comes to a basin and says, listen, we testified in such and such a place, and we were found to be edim zomimim. All right, so now we pay. He says this. He's believed regarding himself, but he's not believed regarding the other fellow. So he shows up in Bezin and says, the two of us were found to be Edim Zomim in another Bezin. The other guy says, what are you talking about? I never heard of such a thing. So then, he's believed about himself, but not about anybody else. So Mar says, come on. If that's the case, that's Lok Rabbi Akiva. That's not like Rabbi Akiva. Because Ika Rabbi Akiva, Amar, Afeinu Mishalema, Piatzmo. The only reason that you would be chayav here is because you showed up in Bezin and admitted that you're an Eid Zomim. That's okay, that's Modi Biknas. Modi Biknas is Patur. So that's not like Rabbi Akiva. Ella, and I assume we wanted to work like Rabbi Akiva. So Ella, be'omer he'adnu v'zamnu be'beit din ploni, b'chiyavnu mamon. Alright, so that we were testified in such a Beis Din. We were found to be Eidim Zomimim. And not only that, we were chiyavnu mamon. That the person who is be'beit din shuzamnu b'imenu anidon b'din al hazamnatenu b'chiyavnu be'beit din. They made us chayav in the mamonari. So now once the other Beis Din paskins that they are chayav and mamon, that they've been caught as Eidim Zomimim and they have to pay, once Beis Din gives out that conclusion, or he gives out that psak, the monetary obligation shifts from being a knas now to being an absolute monetary obligation. Because once Beis Din has determined that you are chayav, then it switches from the Torah's imposition of a knas to now that you have a monetary obligation to compensate at this point in time, or to pay at this point in time. So now, modeh over here, the modeh here won't poter you because you don't have a modeh biknas anymore. You're talking about a fully mamon obligation. So now he comes. So what do I think? Here, he shows up in Beis Din and says, two of us were found to be Eidim Zomimim. Beis Din paskins, they came to a verdict that we are chayav as Eidim Zomimim, we have to pay money. So now, it's no more modeh b'knas, because Beis Din already is paskin that they're chayav. It switches from knas to a monetary obligation. But what I would think is that since he could only talk about himself and obligate himself, but not his partner, maybe he should be patur. Kamash Malon, no, that once we reach that point in time, if he admits to being an Eid Zomim, he pays his portion and he's done. He can't obligate his friend, but he will pay his portion. All right, next Mishnah. The Mishnah here is a complicated Mishnah. It's not so easy, and there's a big Rashi, a big Tosfot on here. I'm going to speak it out from the outside, and hopefully it'll be more understandable. To actually read it inside is a little more difficult, but we'll try to work through the Mishnah. It says, "Meidim anu b'ish ploni shigiresh et ishto velo natan la ktubata." They say he divorced his wife, and he hasn't paid the ktubah to his wife. "Valo ben ayom uven machar sof liten la ktubah." So now, they're found to be Eidim Zomimim. But the truth is that in the end, he probably will have to pay her ktubah. It's not like they're making him chayav in something that he would never be chayav in. There's a possibility that he would have to pay the ktubah, just maybe not today. He may have to pay it later on, may have to pay it at a different time. So therefore, right. So, omdim kama adam rotze litein b'ktubata shel zu, shim nitmal ma, o nitgarsha, v'meita yirashena bala. So they calculate here what, and this is Gemara's going to argue about exactly what the calculation is, but it sounds like from the Mishnah, we calculate here, what would someone pay for the option of owning this woman's ktubah? So let's find out what they would have paid for the option of on the ketubah. That's the value of the ketubah today. And they've accelerated the payment of the ketubah by saying that he owes all the ketubah right today. So they're obligating him some sort of differential between those two. I'll leave it as that broadly. Now the Gemara asks, Ketzad Shamin, how do we assess the loss that was caused over here? So they're different. Amar Rav Chisda Babau. Rav Chisda says it's, we do it by the husband side. Rav Nathan Bar Yosi Amar Bisha, we do it from the woman side. And Amar Rav Papa Bisha B'ketubata, it's the woman and her ketubah. Now what is going on here? What do you mean? What the assessment of the value of the ketubah? Now that is because, this is, we have to just think about in a, outside of the Gemara now, but just a ketubah has two possible outcomes. One possible outcome is that the woman gets the ketubah, right? Meaning that she's divorced, or she's widowed, and then she collects on the ketubah in its entirety. The other possibility is that she predeceases her husband. She predeceases her husband, the ketubah will go to her husband. So that means that both she and her husband own value or option value in the ketubah. So if I was to come here today and purchase the ketubah, if I purchase the woman's rights, or I can purchase the husband's rights to the ketubah. If I purchase the woman's rights to the ketubah, I'm basically buying the option that in the future, right, that if she is widowed or divorced, I will collect on this ketubah. So there are two, what we call two sfeikot here. One sfeik is that, is she the one who surviving? She's the surviving spouse, number one. And number two is there is, how long will it take for me to collect on this money? There's a time value of money. You have to discount the future value of this money back to today. So therefore, I'm not going to pay, if you have a ketubah that's worth 100, I'm not going to pay the full amount of that ketubah today to buy that option. So the way Rashi, let's say Tosfos learns it, I would be willing to pay 40% of the value I would be willing to pay today. Right? It's not exact science, but I'm saying you have to come up with a scenario. It depends what your discount rate is, depends on what your actuarial life, how old the people are, all of that are included here. But the safek, that option that maybe she will survive her husband, plus how long till she will be, you know, that option, I would have paid 40% of the value of the ketubah. That's number one. That's one possibility. On the other hand, I could buy the option from the husband. I could buy the option to the ketubah from the husband. Now, the option to the ketubah of the husband is not just the opposite of the woman. Alright, that's an interesting, you have to realize that it's not, Rashi tells us both point this out. It should be, otherwise what I would just say is, wait, the other part of the option should be, right, if I take the present value of what the ketubah is today, right, then the option should equal split between the husband and the wife. That's not true. Why? Because the husband has more rights here than just the ketubah. The husband has two additional items that give him an advantage. Number one is, he's muchzak in the properties. He owns the properties, he's muchzak in the properties. So that by definition is an intangible right that when you pay for his rights in the ketubah, you'd pay a little more for it because he's the one holding the property. That's one. Number two is, he eats peirot. On the nichsei malug that are in the ketubah, he eats the peirot from those nichsei malug. So his rights are not just in the terminal value of the ketubah to be paid, but he has an annuity until the ketubah is paid out. Even if he were to lose the entire ketubah and he predeceases his wife, nevertheless, through all those years that he lived, he is entitled to the peirot. So if someone to buy the option, the husband's option in the ketubah, they would pay not only for the terminal value, which is the possibility that she predeceases him and he gets the whole ketubah, but it would also pay for the interim value, which is the annuity stream that you have here, plus the fact that he's mukzak in it. Tosfos claims that someone would pay 50% of the face value for such a thing. So that means that if I was to assess the husband's value in the ketubah, it's, according to Tosfos, 50% of the face value. So it's 100, 50 would be the husband's option value that somebody paid for it. On the other hand, the woman's value in the ketubah, the option for the woman, somebody would pay 40% of the face value, which is, call it 40 out of the 100. Now why would you pay more for the husband than the wife, even though it's probably more likely that the wife will end up with the ketubah, from a lifespan, depending on what the age of the people are. Right, there's more possibilities that she ends up with it. But because the husband has the peirot annuity, plus he's mukzak b'davar, you would pay more for it. That's a rashi show to Tosfos Shita. Based on what I've told you so far, you have a wife's value in the ketubah is 40. Right? The husband's value in the ketubah today would be worth 50. So now I tell you, all right, we've accelerated the ketubah. They come and testify in court, and he has to pay the 200 of the ketubah today. All right, he has to pay the 200 of the ketubah today. He's losing all the peirot, all that, everything that he loses, and he's going to have to accelerate. Everything's paid today. Or sorry, 100. I'm sorry, before we said 100 was the terminal value. So 100 he pays today. How do I calculate the loss that you caused him? So that is the machlokas over here. The first day on the Gemara of Chista says that we assessed it based on the baal. What did the baal give up? He owned a value of 50 today. That's his value in the ketubah. So the opportunity cost that he lost was that 50. And what loss did you cause him? He owned something that was worth 50. And now you, what you did was you caused him a loss of his, right now, his rights in the ketubah. His rights in the ketubah were 50 today. You caused him a loss of 50. That's it. Because he today owned something that was worth 50, could have sold it in the market for 50, and you caused him to lose that by making him pay out the ketubah. So it's basically the opportunity cost that you've caused him, which is that he could have owned it, and he could have sold it. That opportunity cost is what you caused him to lose. Therefore, you pay the baal's value in the ketubah. That's Rav Kisa's opinion. Rav Nathan Bar Oshia says, no, Bisha, we specify based on the wife. Why? Because now, one day, if he pays today, what you've done is accelerated him to pay the ketubah. That's 100 today. Now, today, if he would have bought off that value from his wife, today the wife owned in the ketubah a value of 40. That's her rights in the ketubah. Meaning that if the husband wanted to buy back the ketubah from his wife, he would pay 40 today. And his wife's rights to the ketubah, the value that's in it, that the wife already owns, is basically 40 today. So what was the loss? The loss is the difference between what the wife owns today and the 100 he's paying out, which is the terminal value. So you have to pay 60 based on that. Meaning that you have 100 terminal value, you've accelerated that payment, versus if today if the husband wanted to buy from his wife back the rights, he'd have to pay 40. So the first mandamar, and this might become to your question before, the first mandamar says, what does the husband own in the ketubah? And therefore, that's what you caused the loss. You caused him a loss because you took away something he could have sold today. And that's that right. The right that he could have sold today, you took away from him. And that's that opportunity cost is what you're paying for. But the argument might be, which is what you suggested before, Shaul, is that the husband really has the money already. The obligation of the ketubah is if you have to pay out money in the future. Right? He has a right to get the annuity stream, and he has a right to not have to pay his wife and get the next same Malugan Biyoresh that he could sell. But really, he's mukzak in the davar today, so maybe that's not the right way to assess it. So that's the second opinion. That's the opinion of Rav Nathan Bar Oshia, who says, no, look at the what he has to fork out. Today, if he wanted to, he could have bought back the ketubah for 40. So that's the woman's value, and then you didn't cause him that loss. Today, he would have to shell out 40 to pay for the ketubah. In the future, we don't know what happens, but now you've accelerated and forced him to pay the 100 today. If that's the case, the loss that you caused him was the 60, the difference between them. That's the opinion of Rav Nathan Moshe. Rav Papa says, I agree that you assess it based on the woman, but I only say you use the ketubah. You do not deal with the nechse malug shela. You do not pay out based on her property that she brought in. Why? Because they could just say, we came to testify about the ketubah. We didn't know what nechse malug she has. They didn't come and testify. They have no clue. Right. That's, it can be, right. Every ketubah is a ketubah that could differ. They don't know how much was in the ketubah. So the only thing we came to do is testify that you owed her the ketubah, the core ketubah. We don't know anything about the nechse malug. So Rav Papa says you're right. You assess it, but you assess the ketubah value based on the core ketubah value. You have to do the discounted rate, you know, of the core ketubah plus the option value. Say here it would be 20. You know, that's the loss that's caused over here is based on that. The assessment between the core ketubah, which is say worth 50 instead of the full 100, and the option of that is 20, you'd pay 30. The difference between the 50 and the 20 would be the 30. So you have basically here a Mishnah that says that the Edim Zomim caused the loss. They want to know what the losses they caused. The first way to look at it is to say, what was the opportunity cost that the husband lost? That's what you caused him to lose. He could have sold it. Instead, you made him lose that. So that's one value. Other possibility is to look at what the woman's value today in the ketubah is and what he'll have to pay in the future. If you accelerate him paying that, what's the difference between the current value and the future value? And that's what they have to pay today. That's what, which is a higher amount. It's usually going to be a higher amount. And that's a more strict version of it. The Mishnah reads more like this. Both Tosfos and Rashi agree that the Mishnah reads like this because the Mishnah seems to be talking about the woman. You're talking about her ketubah, her value. It seems to be written that you could explain the Baal side by just saying the woman's rights, and therefore you know what the husband's rights are because he might have to pay the ketubah, but it does lean more in favor of this. The last opinion just says that we only deal with the core ketubah, not the nechse malug. It's the same concept that we use the woman's value to determine what the difference is, but we just don't look at the nechse malug because those are undefined. And we're not going to make them chayav for an undefined loss because they really don't know when they come to testify they're going to cause such loss. Even though when they do testify they cause the loss, but they didn't know about that. They weren't aware that they're causing such a loss. So that's Gemara over here.
Maybe this is not correct, but if you say the ksuba has an objective value, right, and the two people that have and they have it as any sort of asset of a husband and a value are the husband and the wife. Would you assume that their two parts should add it to the total?
Right, so somebody actually called me last night and asked me that question, and the answer is no, for two reasons. All right, well, number one is...
current value.
Exactly. Present value is different than future value. So if it's worth 100 in the future, it doesn't mean it's worth 100 today. You have to discount it back. So there's time value of money, which means that, the way Tosfos is reading, it's worth 90 today, or 80 today. But okay, so now your other question should be, okay, out of that 80, they should be the two components. They should be able to figure out one has 50, 30, whatever the breakdown is. But that's also not true because their rights are different in the ketubah, which is, means that the current value of the ketubah is not simply the terminal value of the payout of the ketubah. Right, exactly. Different rights. The annuity that he has in the payroll are unique to the husband, and the wife doesn't have that right at all. So when you say that, wait, so it's not just what the terminal value of the ketubah is, there's also this annuity stream which only belongs to the husband. So you can't add them together and get to the value. For those two reasons, you can't do it. Number one is the husband has additional rights. Plus, because of the time value of money, there's the sum of their two options will not equal the total terminal value of the Tuba. So, it's a good question, but because of that, it won't work out that way. Alright, now, next Mishnah. He says he's chayav 1,000, he has a loan that's outstanding, you have to pay him back today and within 30 days. Right, he says, no, it's from now until 10 years from now. Meaning that what they basically did was he agrees that he is obligated. He owes the money, but they've accelerated the terms. They're saying the terms are up in 30 days, and he says the terms are up in 10 years. So, omdim, kama adam rotel ten viyubi ado elav zuz, ben notam mikan, adlam idiom, ben notam mikan ad esu shanim. Mishnah recognizes that there's a time value of money. Right, if I have to repay a loan in 30 days versus have to repay it in 10 years, what's the option value to have the money for 10 years? It's basically the question here. What's that value? So the loss that I'm causing is the difference between having the 1,000 zuz for 10 years and the 1,000 zuz for 30 days. And that's basically the borrowing. It's basically a cost. What's the cost of taking a loan out for 1,000 zuz for the additional 10 years or whatever, 9 years and 11 months? What is that value? And that's what they're causing the loss here. They're not causing the loss of the loan, the 1,000 zuz. That's clearly not. He owes 1,000 zuz. Everybody agrees to that. So that can't be there. The value is the time value of money. And that is the discounted rate between what it would be to have a loan for 10 years versus what it means to have a loan for 30 days. And that difference is what they're going to have to pay. Now we're going to get into a sugya that deals with Shemitat Ksafim and Shvi'it, because this Mishnah is going to end up being a proof or a issue for the Gemara. So that's what we're going to speak about. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Amalvet chaveiro l'esu shanim shvi'it mishamtato. Person who lends his friend for 10 years has a loan that's standing for 10 years and it's not going to be collected until, he can't collect in between. But that's it. Out of 10 years, it's got a bullet payment out in 10 years. That is shvi'it mishamto. The shvi'it wipes it out. Even though currently you cannot pressure him to pay the money. I mean that the whole idea of Shemitah is that you're not allowed to go and pressure the borrower to pay you back. Here you can't pressure him. Why? Because it's not due. It hasn't come to term yet, the loan, so you can't pressure him to pay you back. So there is no egos. Nevertheless, sof atili daily egos. In the end, you will collect from him. In the end, since you will put pressure on him, therefore the shvit comes along and says, no more pressure put on the lender, and it's mishmamet. The shvit wipes out the loan and stops the loan. Meiti rabkano, our Mishnah. What about our Mishnah? What does our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah says there were an argument about the loan. Was the loan from now until 30 days, or now until 10 years? So now Gemara says, they're causing a huge, much bigger loss over here now. Right? Either depending whose side they're from. I mean, if they're from the borrower side, they shouldn't have to pay anything. I mean, they're actually causing him a much bigger loss on the borrower side. The full value of the loan. He would have, if it had been added at Eser Shanim, the Shvit would have wiped it out. He would have owed nothing. Now that it's saying Shloshim Yom, he owes the whole amount. So it's not just the difference in the time value of money that we're talking about over here. What are we talking about? We're talking about the full loan. It's the difference between having to pay the loan back and not having to pay the loan back. So it is the Elul Zuz over here. Our mission doesn't mention it. The fact that our mission doesn't mention that suggests that the Shemitah is not Mishametet. So Amar Rava, Achamai Skinan, B'milve ala Mashkon, or Malve ala Mashkon, Moser Shtotav Beit Din. So I made a case here where the Malveh was protected against Shemitah. How is he protected? He used a Mashkon. Right, we've discussed this before. What does Mashkon do? We'll just use the easiest way to explain it. The Mashkon is as if it's as if collected already. Since it's as if collected already, there's no more pressure to be put on the loan. There's no low egos anymore because you already got the collateral. You have the loan value in your hand. Right, the obvious question, which is the Gemara, we've discussed this before, is what happens if the Mashkon does not equal the full value of the loan? And that was dealt with Rebbe's Shita. Right, Masechet Gittin. I mean, it's not for argument over here, but just the Mashkon already is if collected. Uber Moser Shtarot the Beit Din. The other case is that you give the Shtar to Beis Din. Why? Because then he's no longer Lo Yigos. Because then Beis Din becomes the trustee for the Shtar, and they're the ones who will collect on behalf of the individual, and therefore there's no longer Lo Yigos. Rashi calls Moser Shtarot the Beit Din Pruzbol. That is the Pruzbol that Itkan Hillel, which is not necessarily true. Tosus takes issue with this, because Pruzbol is premised on Moser Shtarot the Beit Din, but it's not the same thing. And that's what Tosus points out over here. There are two different concepts. Pruzbol is a din dirabonon, that you sign some sort of document that creates as if you Moser the Shtar of the Beis Din. But Moser the Shtar of the Beis Din, according to many Rishonim, according to us, it might work d'oraita. It might work even min haTorah. That means that even when Shemitah is mid'oraita, you could use Moser the Shtar of the Beis Din. You can't do that, right, when you have Pruzbol. Pruzbol is a din dirabonon, only works when Shemitah Ksafim is dirabonon. According to Rashi, they're one and the same. So if that's the case, Moser Shtar of the Beit Din, according to Rashi, will not work when Shemitah Ksafim is d'oraita. According to Tosos, it will work when Shemitah Ksafim is d'oraita. It's not a malveil mashkon, but Moser Shtar of the Beit Din ain mashmitin. We have a mishnah, it's an explicit mishnah, right, then Shvit, that if you use a mashkon or you have it Moser Shtar of the Beit Din, it's not mashmit. So that's how we answer up the mishnah. Our mishnah is dealing with a case where there's Moser Shtar of mashkon. That's why Shemitah is not an issue here. So Shemitah is not an issue, therefore the question is only about time value of money. Same between a 30-day loan and a 10-year loan. What's the differential in the time value of money? Whereas if they had not done that, truthfully, if you had not had a mashkon, or you had not been Moser Shtar of the Beit Din, the difference would be the full loan, because the loan would have been mishamet on Shemitah. Ike de Amre, let's say they're just the opposite. Amre Yudam Shmuel, Hamalve et Chaviro le'esu shanim. So over here, this is, before we had Amar Rav Yudah Amar Shmuel, who says that when you're Mavel Eshesu Shanim, that it's Mishamet. Over here we have the opposite position, which is, Amal Ve'et Chaveru L'Eshesu Shanim, Ein Shvi'it Mishamtato. The other way around, Shvi'it does not work. This is the way you pass in the Lacha, the Rabino Tam points it out. Why? Because our Mishnah supports this understanding. Right now, instead of having a question for our Mishnah, the Mishnah will support this understanding of the Gemara. You're right, in the end, in the when we reach the payment, the balloon payment of the loan, then you're right, then you will have to give Lo Yigos. But that'll be after Shemitah is already passed. So on Shemitah, if I come to you and say, is there Lo Yigos? The answer is no. So therefore the Shemitah does not wipe out such a loan.
Right, so Amar Rav Kahana,
Afana Mina Tinina, that's our Mishnah. Om Din Kama Adam Rotze Litein V'yu Elam Zuz B'yadob Ben Litein Mikan V'ad Lamed Yom U'ben Litein Mikan V'esu Shanim. Right, that's our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, what's the difference between a 30-day loan and a 10-year loan? V'yamar Shvid Misham Tato Kulu Nami V'adish Lomelei. If Shvid wipes it out, then he would owe the Loveh all the money, because the Loveh would have now had a forgiven loan. The fact that the Mishnah doesn't even discuss the Elam Zuz here shows you that Shemitah is not Mishamet. That's why I have a Mishnah that supports it. So that's the answer. Amar Rava, Rava answers the same thing again. Amar Rava, Achamai Eskina. No, you don't have a proof for our Mishnah. Why? Because I could explain our Mishnah. Malve, the person lends. Malve, ala mashkon, he lent with the mashkon, or he lent with Moser Shtatav the Beit Din. So since I can explain away the Mishnah, you can't bring a proof from it. But the pashtus of the Mishnah is like this Lashon, and therefore the Rabbeinu Tam makes it clear that we Paskin, that's the way we do Paskin, is like our Mishnah, which is that there is no ghost when the loan extends beyond that period of time. It's not. Right, right. He does it, but he's just saying you can't prove permission. It's not a malveh ala mashkon v'moser shadav lebedin emisham mashmitin. So there is no, when it comes to this, there's no shmitah. Right now we'll do one more thing with shmitah ksafim, and then we'll spend some time just on shmitah ksafim itself. Amar Yudah Meshmoa Omer lechaviro menat shalot tishmiteni shvi'it. He says, I'm lending you the money on condition that shmitah will not wipe it out. Shvit, mishamet, too bad. Can't do that. Shmita will wipe it out. You don't have a right to do that. Lema kasav shmol matne amasha ketuba torahu. That this is making a condition against the law of the Torah. V'chol matne amasha ketuba torah, it's no batel. If you try to make a tnai against the law of the Torah, it fails. Mar says, v'hai itmar, wait, that can't, we can't, I don't think we can say that. Why? Ha'omer lechaveiro amanat she'en lecha alai ona'ah. A person says that I'm selling you this object, I'm selling you this chayfetz on the condition that there is no onah here. Rashi and Tosfos disagree about what this means. I think Tosfos is more the pashtus of the Gemara here. Rashi says that almanach ein lecha alai onah means that I'm not cheating you. Whatever. When Rashi says that if I say almanat, that it means Rav Amar yesh lo alav onah, you can still make a claim shomar ein lo alav onah, that he have no malah. So, hi, Itmar La, we learned on this already. Amar Ravana, the Dima Farshalei Mini de Shmuel. I have an explanation of Shmuel. I have Shmuel by Shmita, who's saying when I say Almanat, Shalosh Dimension Shvit, it fails. I have Shmuel by Ona'a that says Almanat, Shenecha Alai Ona'a, and it works. How come when you make a tznai against Shemitah, it doesn't work? Make a tznai against Ona'a, it does work. So I'll explain to Shmuel. Almanat, Shenecha Alai Ona'a. If he says Almanat, that you have no claim of Ona'a against me, in law of Ona'a, then he can't make a claim. Almanat, Shein Bo Ona'a, that there is no Ona'a here, Hariyesh Bo Ona'a. In our case, same thing. If you say on the condition that Shvi'it will not wipe it out, and Shvi'it Meshamto, right, that you will, I'm sorry, on the condition that you will not cause it to be wiped out on Shvi'it, and Shvi'it Meshamto. That the Shvi'it itself will not wipe it out, Shvi'it Meshamto, then Shvi'it wipes it out. What's the difference here? It's a key difference. Who are you asking over here? In the first case, I'll use Tosfos Pshat first, and then I'll explain Rashi's. But basically, what I'm saying to the individual, both by Ona'a and Shemitah, is there are two parties involved here. There's number one, the party, there's a claimant who can make a claim against you, right? And, right, there's also, about the Torah law. If you're trying to come and abrogate the Torah law, we don't let you do that. If you say, the Shemitah doesn't functionally wipe it out, you can't do that. The Torah says Shemitah wipes it out. You're wrong. You can't change. You can't change a fact. That's a fact, and you can't change that fact. It's, I would call it like the Chepetz, the Torah itself. You can't be make conditions against the Torah. Torah says it's Shemit. You can't change that fact. On the other hand, what you can do is say, Afal Pi Kein, which is you say to the lender, if you say to the borrower, you say, listen, you're right, Enoch Hanami Shemitah is going to wipe it out, but I want you to say that I'm going to pay it back anyway. I want you to say that even though Shemitah's wiped it out, nevertheless you're going to pay it back. So that you could do. Now by Ona'a, it's easier to see this. The Gemara makes an equation here, but I don't think the equation is exactly equal, but the Gemara makes the equation.
Right. It's more like you say, look, I want you to waive your right.
Right, so very good.
Your right exists, but I want you to promise right. You're not going to utilize it.
Exactly, so that's the big difference. Ona'a, the way Tosfos explains it, Ona'a is, I can say to you, listen, number one, if I say to you that Ona'a doesn't apply over here, doesn't work. The Torah says Ona'a is a din, and you can't wipe it out. If you say to him, I want you to waive your rights to make the claim for Ona'a, that you can ask of the individual. But that is a key difference between Shemitah and the Ona'a. Ona'a, you're waiving a right, you're forgiving him. You're saying, okay, I won't make a claim against you. In Shemitah, it's not that you're saying I'm waiving a right. What you're basically saying is, I'm going to actively pay you, despite that fact. Tosfos learns, that's the two cases. One case, if I try to make a condition against the Torah, fails. If I make a deal, it's like a side deal, monetary matters, we're allowed to make any agreement between us when it comes to monetary matters. You want to have some contract between us, we can make any contract between us. The Torah might wipe it out, the Torah might say this, but we agree that you're going to still obligate yourself, or you're going to waive your rights in these cases. That we can do. We can make such a case when it comes to monetary matters. We can do that, and that'll work. That's the way Tosfos learns. Rashi makes a claim here. It's a very strange. He says that when it says, "In bo ona'a," Rashi says you're really making a claim that I'm not cheating you in this case. I'm not cheating you in this case. Therefore, if he finds out that there really is ona'a, you can come make a claim. Rashi, it's supposed to Tosfos says, when I say "in bo ona'a," means I'm saying that ona'a shouldn't apply here. And therefore we say, no, it doesn't work because the Torah says Ona applies. Too bad. But Rashi says, no, Shein Bo Ona means you're making a declaration that I'm not cheating you in this chepetz. And then you come along and find out that he did cheat you. So therefore it's not true. Alright, that's the way Rashi learns it. It's a nuanced, a little different, but doesn't flow as easily in the Gemara, because then how do you compare that to Shvi'it? That doesn't have application by Shvi'it. You don't have such an application by Shvi'it. Now, the Gemara now has laid out for us this idea about Shemitah. So now what I want to show you is about Shemitah Ksafim. How does Shemitah Ksafim work over here? And if you look on the top of the page here, I brought you a number of the Rishonim. What I'm going to show you are the two extremes and then the middle positions. The Yireim, the Sefer Yireim, is an extreme and he's a loner. I mean that there's nobody else who thinks like the Yireim. And it's so much so that he's a loner that we'll see in a second that others think that he recanted on his position because it's such an extreme position. The Yireim says that a chol shavar alav shvi'it einu rashai lakvo ela apiyam malveh. The loveh is required to pay back a loan after shvi'it. He doesn't have a right to have it loaned. It's not that Shemitah wipes it out. You know how the loan gets wiped out on Shemitah? If the malveh says it's wiped out. According to the Yireim, the Shemitah does nothing automatically. The malveh has to make a declaration that the loan is forgiven. Until the malveh makes such a declaration, the loveh is chayav to repay the loan. So what? Shkol zman shlo yishmito malveh chayav lifroa. If the malveh does not forgive the loan, the loveh must pay the loan. Ella, so what should he do? Loveh yazmin malveh ledin, should bring him to Beis Din. So that he'll make that declaration. Like Hashem said, and he says over there, they look in Oto, right? Because it's a mitzvah to say, for him to say mashmit, but it's like any other mitzvah to say. But what you see from the Urim, which is an incredible thing, is that the Urim believes that the loan is outstanding till the Malver forgives it. That's an incredible thing. Again, he's alone in this, in saying this, that the loan is existent and is extant till the Malveh forgives it. That means nothing happens till the Malveh says, I'm forgiven. So you want to explain our Gemara over here in Makos, very easy. We say, you know, if we make agreement between us that we want the Shemitah not to work, then what you're basically saying is, I'm waiving. It works nicely with the Onas. I'm waiving my right to take you to Basin to force you to say Mashmitani. That's what I'm doing. I'm waiving my right to force you to say Mashmitani. That works for that side. The problem is the other side, which is what the Rikanti brings up. The Rikanti quotes the Sefer Yerim, and he says, Mil, beperakama de makot. Our Gemara right here is a proof against him. Why? The Mechila Gemurahi. It's clear that the Gemara believes that the Mechila here happens automatically without any input from the Malveh. Why? Because the Gemara says, Damar hatam amaved chaver leser shanim shvit misham tato. Wait, it didn't say that the Malveh has to forgive. It says that the Shvit would wipe it out automatically. The question from the Gemara and our Mishnah would be, he should owe the whole Elev Zuz automatically. If it was for 10 years and Shemitah wipes it out, it would be automatic that the loan would go. And he says that proof is our Gemara. And that's the problem for the Urim, which works well with the one side, but in the case when I say Shemitah shouldn't work over here. What is Shemitah? When I say that Shemitah shouldn't work, and the Gemara says it works anyway, remember when we make a condition, if I say don't make a claim against me, that's fine, or pay the loan anyway, that's fine. But when I say Shemitah doesn't work, we say Shemitah works anyway. According to the Urim, what do you mean Shemitah works anyway? Shemitah only works if the Malveh speaks up. So what type of deal are we making over Shemitah doesn't work? Shemitah doesn't work. I mean, the only thing you can do is wipe out the essay. So that's why it's a little, the Gemara doesn't read so well, and also this idea. So the Rikanti says it's Mechila Gemura, and then afterwards he says, Mikzat Mischaot, Misefer Yerim, Katub Kibasov Chazarba. At the end, it was Choser from this position, you know, based on his Gemara, because everybody else in the world is against him, and it's a Mechila Gemura. And then is the basic stance of many of the Rishonim. The many Rishonim believe that the loan is wiped out. So you have the Reim here that says that the loan is extant, and nothing happens to the loan at Shemitah until the Malveh intercedes. You have the Yukanti on the other side who says that the loan's gone. It disappears. Shemitah comes, the loan's gone. And you'll see, like, Minchas Chinuch, when he expresses this, he says that it's gone so much so that if the Malveh comes and claims the loan and collects on it, not only Chayav and he's violated the Lav, or the Lav and the Asay of collecting the money, he's also a Gazlan. He has no collection rights anymore. It's gone. The loan is gone, and he's taking money from someone. So he says, over a lav de gezel. So much so. I mean, this again, the other extreme is that the loan is not there anymore, and it's considered gezel. The Or Zeruah, I'm just going to bring you a number of Rishonim here. We can see it. The Or Zeruah says, Ela afilu tovo bebeitin lifroa. Vomer eni mishamet. He goes to Beis Din. He says, I want him to pay me, and I don't forgive the loan. Lo yechusha lovet. Lovet doesn't have to worry about it. Rav mipnei shetorah yishmitoto. He has no rights. He can go into Beis and scream, I'm not forgiving the loan. I want to collect it. And it's too bad. The Lobe can just say, you know, hasta la vista. Because the loan is gone. It's not there anymore. That's the Zeruah. The Rambam writes towards the end in Alacha Dalet, Perk Ted Alacha Dalet. He says, once Shvi comes, Avad HaChov. The Chov is gone. Lost entirely. Again, you can see in the Shutta Rashba I brought you, Vavilei Kenimcha, Dafkato de Malka Habi, which is the terminology that's used by the Shonim, it's Dafkato de Malka. It's the king's decree. The king makes everything free, the king forgives the loans. Being Hashem makes the declaration, the loan is no longer exists. And you have this again, I'm bringing the Tshuvas Rabbeinu Avigdor HaKohen, which is in the Mordechai and Gittin, which is a Shvi'it Mishametet Me'alea. Shvi'it works by itself. Afo Pish Lomar Mishametani. Even the Malveh says no words, the loan is gone. Alright, so here we have two extremes. In Urim, which says the loan's always here, and until the Malveh forgives it. The other extreme, which is that the loan's gone, so much so that it doesn't even exist. There is no loan in existence anymore. Now what I'll show you on page 2, if you turn over, is that page 2 actually has a set of Rishonim that come out somewhere in between. They agree to the point that Shemitah is Mishamet the loan, but there still seems to be some residual something left over. You start to see it a little bit in the Lashon HaRosh. The Rosh says, HaTorah Tzivta Alai LaHashmito. So this is a little bit, when the Torah tells me to go ahead and be Mashmit alone. So what he's saying is, yes, it's Avgata the Malka, it's the Torah, the Shemitah is going to happen, but the Torah tells me that I should do this. The Torah is forcing me to say, Shemitah, I have to be Mashmit. It almost has a tinge of the Urim in it, this Rosh here. But it's still that the Torah, again, the Rosh believes that the Shemitah works by itself. But he's still saying that the Shemitah...
He doesn't say it as an equal like this.
Right, it's not Ma'akiv like the Reim, but he's still giving this a touch that there is something that the Malveh has to get involved. And you see this much more in the Smag. The Smag over here says, he says, Shetei HaShemitah Mishemetet HaHalvah, Shemitah wipes out the Halvah. Va'afo Pishi Ratzal for Amlo, even though he wants to come and pay them, Yomar Lehem Mishemetani. Now the term Poreya means that there's still an outstanding loan. Now I'm going to show you here that a number, you'll see there's a number of the Mishonim still say that he can be, the Loveh can be Poreya. A Loveh that's Poreya means that he's repaying an obligation. If you say he gives it b'matana, that's one thing. If he gives it as a gift, that's one thing. But when you use the term poreya, there's an implication that there's still some sort of outstanding obligation that's there. So you see from the smag that even though the Shemitah has wiped it out, the Loveh after comes and says, I want to be poreya. I want to pay back the loan. He has to say b'shemetani. And you see this again, the Sefer Itur has an interesting idea here. The Sefer Itur comes along and says, v'had etzanana makzir chol v'chavero tzarech lomar lo b'shemetani. That's only on Shvi'it itself. On Shvi'it, there's an obligation for it. He splits the difference. He says, after Shvi'it, because when is the loan Mishameit? That's the end of Shvi'it. So that happens automatically and it's gone. During Shvi'it, there's an obligation on the Malveh to come and forgive the loan. So he takes both of them. He takes both opinions. After Shvi'it, it's wiped out. During Shvi'it, the loan is still there, but you should say Mishameit any. So he takes like both sides. And Tosfos Arid has the most, as the most radical shita here, the Red Tosfos Arid is an amazing split here. His Peirush b'dibra ba'alma, shomer meshmeitani kayim mitzvah, v'achar kach mutar l'gvot chovo. As soon as he says meshmeitani, he did the mitzvah. And now he can go collect his loan. Meaning that the loan is still outstanding and he can go collect it. So what is all the Shemitah about? Because the Loveh never has to show up. He says, if the Loveh never shows up, he can't go make a demand, come and pay me. He has exit. So the Loveh stays home, never comes to the Malveh and says, I want to pay you. The loan will never be paid back. If the Loveh shows up, and to pay the Malveh back, he says, Mishamethani, I forgive you. And afterwards, then the loan becomes fully collectible and he can go after the loan at that point in time. It's an amazing Tosfos Arid here. But what you see from the Tosfos Arid is, yes, Shemitah works by itself to wipe out the loan. But the loan is still there. It's still outstanding. He has lost his right of collection. That's the difference. These Rishonim believe, and this is this middle ground, is that the loan is still outstanding, but you've lost your right of collection. Or the right of demand, depending where. But now the Tosfos Arid says, yes, you lost it in some case, unless the Loveh shows up. Then you can get it back again. If you say Mishameh, then you can get it back again.
Mishalem, yeah. Have you someone who borrows before Shemitah?
Right, so it depends what you view the Shemitah doing. If the Shemitah wipes out the loan entirely, then you have absolutely no obligation. There is no loan to repay anymore.
Did you then lose your opportunity to...
Mishalim? I don't know. It's a good question. I don't think so. But according to these Rishonim, yes. In this Rishonim, the Loveh should go lifnei mishurat hadin and pay back the loan because there is an outstanding obligation, just there's no right of collection. So therefore he asks that he can give it back as a matana, as a gift, but not as a poreya, as chobo, because he can't make a demand for pirion. According to the Tosfos Arid, he can even make a demand at some point for the pirion. But this idea, yeah, if I just show you the rab, there's a lashon of eno yachol litzvo halvato michavero. He can't claim his loan from his friend, which means that the loan's still there. It's a lack of, he's lost his right of demand, but the loan is outstanding. You see this in the Rush. He says, I want to pay you back. Not matana, lifroa, I want to pay the loan back. Same thing in the Rav, again, if he says, I want to pay you anyway. But he's not just saying, I want to pay you and give you the money. He's saying, I want to pay the loan back, which means the loan's outstanding. And I'll prove to you that that's what they mean, because look at the Tosfos Yom Tov. Tosfos Yom Tov quotes the Bar Tanura and the Rush, and he says, v'davar teimahu, dimikabel piron imkeinenu mishamet. If he accepts it as payment, then he didn't forgive the loan. So you see that these other, what are the others? The Rav Bertanur and the Rosh, what do they believe? They believe that, yes, you've lost the right of collection, but that doesn't mean that the loan's not outstanding. He can pay you back the loan because you've just lost your right of collection. The Tosfos Yom Tov says, what are you talking about? When the loan's forgiven, the loan's forgiven means there's no loan anymore. If he comes and pays you back, it can't be piraon because then you weren't mishamet. It has to be a matana. But you see their difference in a view of what's here. According to the Rosh and the Rav Bertanur, you have to say what happened was that the loan is still outstanding after Shemitah wipes it out. Shemitah wipes out your right to demand the loan, does not wipe the loan out. Therefore, they say when the Loveh comes and says, I want to pay anyway, that's fine. According to Tosfos Yom Tov, the loan is gone. There's no such loan anymore. If there's no loan anymore, then what? Then you have to say, I'm giving it as a matana, I'm not giving it as piraon. So just wanted to present you these three different extremes. You have one extreme, again, the Uraim, who says, that when it comes to the loan, it's only forgiven if the Malva says it. You have the other Rishonim, like right, the Rikanti, we saw the Michlas Chinuch, the Zerua, the Rambam, the Shuter Ashba, which was a big door that all of them believe that the loan is gone and doesn't exist anymore. It's wiped out entirely. And then we have Slua, Rishonim, and Achronim, which I wanted to show you, that have some in-between status, which is that maybe the Shemitah wipes it out, but the loan is still outstanding. Shemitah wipes out the right of collection, does not wipe out the loan itself, and therefore, you can still get the loan back or be repaid the loan, even though you may not be able to demand the loan. Right, Tana. A stam milveh is for 30 days. So if you lend it out, you're not allowed to make a claim within the first 30 days. Same rule applies to when a person gave out a loan on a shtar. That's only when you use a shtar for the loan, right? Because a person wouldn't put all the effort to write a shtar because it's going to lend for less than 30 days. A person would lend for less than 30 days because he doesn't put any effort into it. This is what my beloved said. Chavivi would be Rav Chia, his uncle, his beloved. Echad amalveh b'shtar, echad amalveh al peh. Right, whether a person is lends milveh. I'm sorry, milveh b'shtar, echad amalveh al peh. The a person who lends out on a shtar or b'al peh, that both of them is a minimum of 30 days. Tanya Nami Ochim, a person supports it. Amalveh chaviro stam idroshadov tovo pachod mishloshim yom. Echad amalveh b'shtar, echad amalveh al peh. Doesn't matter if the loan was done by al peh or by shtar. Amalei Shmuel Rav Matna lo teiti v'karech adem farshit la. Shmuel says to Rav Matna, don't sit down or until, you know, don't rest until you explain to me this meaning. Manaha milta. Damar Rabbanan, where is this the source for this that the Rabbanan say? Amalvet chaveru stam in roshelu tovo, right? Pachod milamid yom. Echad amalvet b'shtar v'echad amalvet peh. Right? It doesn't matter if he lends by peh or b'shtar. Amalei diktiv. Karva shnata shneva shnata shmita. I know that Shemitah is coming up. Don't I know automatically that Shemitah? There's another Shemitah that's just like this. Person lends his friend b'stam. He's not allowed to collect from him within the 30 days. Just like when Shemitah comes along and says, right, you no longer can collect the loan. Right, so to over here, when you have it within the first 30 days, you have no rights of, right, you have no rights of collection here within the first 30 days. Now what you do, the fact that the Gemara compares these two cases, right, is an indication of what, maybe what they view it. Over here, you have you cannot collect in the first 30 days, but that means after 30 days, there will be some right of a collection. That's number one. Within the first 30 days, you have no rights of collection, nothing at all. But the loan is still outstanding. Right, over here also, you would suggest, what, that even though you've wiped out the right of collection, but the loan is not, right, it sounds like the loan's outstanding still, you just wiped out the right of collection. If you compare Shvius to a case of Stam Milver for 30 days, that shows loan outstanding, right of collection not available. Right, and that would be an indication like those compromise Rishonim that we saw, and it seems to be in that direction that the Gemara is going over here, although it's clearly not like the Urim, because over here you're seeing that it happens automatically. It's not something that the Malva has to do, it's automatically built into the loan. 30 days within a year is like a full year, and therefore over here, just like Shnata Sheva, so 30 days also is considered like Shana. So that Shana is like the Shnata Shmita. So that's why you have two statements in the pasuk: Shnata Sheva, Shnata Shmita. There are two concepts: the Shnata Shmita, which is really the Shmita year, and the Shnata Sheva or Shnata Shmita, whichever one you don't use, is the Shana, which is 30 days is a year. So that's the Shana. So that's the other Shana, where you're forgiven, the loan cannot be collected during that period of time. Right. So, we have one more statement here. Is someone who opens up a neck, a hole for a neck in a new baguette, is chayav chatat on Shabbat. That's a malacha. It's tikkun kli. You're fixing the kli and you're chayav chatat. Why is this brought down here? Because we have a series of statements named in Rav Yehuda, whether it's from Shmuel or Rav, and Rav Kahana asks questions on them. So every time Rav Kahana asks a question, also over here. Matkivla Rav Kahana, b'chima ben zulim gufat chavit. Right, this is the case in Perkel Chavit. In Shabbos, you're allowed to open up kelim on Shabbos. You can cut off the top of a chavit, and then you can eat from the food that's inside. How come over there you can take off the cover, open up a cover, and eat from it, and over here you can't make a hole to wear it? What's the difference? Both of them should be tikkun kli. He says, oh, it's a big difference. Why? What are you talking about? When are you talking about a beged? Right, when you're talking about a baguette, there was never a hole there before. When you open up the hole, that is, what? A new petach that you're making. On the other hand, the chavit was open at one point in time. It was covered and sealed. You're right, it's sealed now, but it's covered and sealed, but it was once opened. So there is a petach that exists. It's just covered. So when you break it open, you're just reopening that petach again. You're re-accessing a petach that already exists. That's not tikkun kli. That's just removing the cover. Versus when you cut out a tzavar, beit tzavar, that's what I'm gonna give. This gemara, I didn't want to spend so much time because it's really shy after Shabbos, but this gemara is really all the questions about opening kelim at Shabbos really revolves around this understanding of the gemara. Right, well, the Gemara there, the Rishonim or the Chazanish or Moshe argue about what it means that you can open it up. Do you have to destroy the top, or does it mean that you made a nice clean cut? It's all machlok is about how exactly it's being opened, but it all derives from this. This one little thing is what makes all the questions about Kelim HaShavs comes from this idea. Rami Yudim Arav, Shloshet Lugim Mayim Shnafalu Tucham Kotav Shel Yayin. You know what? I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop here, and then we'll do this tomorrow. I'll stop here.